Welcome to the It's All Happening Women in CPG podcast. I'm your host, Danielle Calabrese, former CPG founder turned executive who finally woke up one day, 16 years into my career, and decided to take back my power and build a community for women in CPG. Tune in as we break down strategies that successful female entrepreneurs are using to build their businesses and talk about what it's like to be a woman in a male-dominated industry. You'll hear stories of the people who make shit happen, overcoming struggles, and celebrating the wins. Whether you're looking for inspiration, industry secrets, or life-changing insights, this is the place. Hey guys, so if you love a great founder origin story, you really should check out Susanna Rizzo of Jenny's House. I am totally obsessed with her product and her brand. She is such a talent when it comes to focaccia. Today, we really unpack how she's building her business, her different product lines. She has three separate product lines. One is for food service, on-premise, chefs, restaurants, her fresh baked focaccia. Then she has a really, really cute, delicious par-baked product in adorable packaging that sits in the frozen section in the grocery store. And then she also just recently launched this focaccia mix that is so fun to use and creates the best focaccia that you've ever had fresh out of your oven. So we dive into why she's really doubling down on focaccia and also how she sees the future of her business and what she's really growing into. Susanna is a great example of building a profitable business on your own terms. She shares with us how she's thinking about margins and how she's really focused on regional growth. And she quit her corporate job, which was very stable, where she was for a very long time, and really took this leap into building this incredible bakery company. So if you haven't heard of Jenny's House yet, you should definitely check it out. You're going to love the product if you're in LA. And if you're not in LA, you can order her baking mixes online. So this conversation is really just a deep dive into her business and how she's planning on expanding over the next couple of years. I hope you enjoy it. Susanna Rizzo, welcome to the It's All Happening Women in CPG podcast.
Thank you. Yeah, so happy to be here and thank you for having me on. I feel grateful to be able to lend some wisdom to.
Absolutely. I want to just say first and foremost, I know I've told you this before, but I am obsessed with your product and your focaccia and your just brand in general. I think I first discovered you at the Snackshot event at Expo West. And I was like, what is this bread? It's so good. Oh my gosh.
Thank you.
I absolutely love it. And then you like blew my mind with your focaccia mix that you just launched. And I was actually able to make that on my own. And I seriously wake up sometimes like dreaming about the bread. I'm not kidding you. like legit, that smell of like the yeast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like, oh my gosh, it's so
olive
good.
Oil and the
it's delish. So Jenny's House, guys. Susanna Rizzo is the founder of Jenny's House. Susanna, so let's just dive in. But before we dive in, I want to hear from you. The question I ask all my guests: what are you currently hustling for?
I think most people know focaccia. I think that it's just it's clearly not on the shelves. You can't maybe get it at your local bakery. Certainly in small towns in the middle of the country, you can't find it. So I'm really trying to bring focaccia to people's everyday dinner, lunch, breakfast tables and transform it from just a special occasion, maybe luxury artisanal product to an everyday occasion.
I think I have to say there's a lot of bad focaccias out there.
Yeah.
Like, there are like ones that I've bought at the grocery store before, or even like in bakeries, because it's just so good when it's so fresh, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I've had good ones at restaurants,
but I've also had a lot of bad ones, like super subpar. So having yours, it's like really, it's elevated for sure.
Thank you. Thank you. And then, yeah, and being able to bake it yourself in your own kitchen and taste it hot out of the oven.
You can't beat that freshness, you know?
So yours is just as good as mine, you know? You can do it yourself.
All right. So we're going to talk all about your product strategy and go to market and all that stuff. But tell us about your background.
Well, I think food has always been a really big part of my life. I'm Italian, Sicilian to be exact, like a third generation Italian. And so I grew up cooking with my dad, come from a line of some really great home cooks. So food was always a really big part of my life. I think I told you when we first chatted that kids would be running home to watch cartoons, but I would be turning the Food Network on and watching Jada and Rachel Ray and Ina and all of, you know, everyone on the Food Network.
Emeril.
Bam. What was that?
What was it saying? It was bam.
Yeah, bam. Bam. Yeah. He's a showman. And food was always a big part of my life. Cooking, always loved to cook. How the focaccia came about was in the pandemic, as we were all kind of stuck at home. I got really into focaccia in particular and just was perfecting it. And my friends, I moved upstate from Brooklyn to Woodstock for a couple years in the pandemic. And so my friends would come upstate and they would be like, oh, obviously I would cook these big meals.
Are you a chef though? Are you a chef?
No, I'm not a trained chef, but...
You're an enthusiastic home chef though.
Yeah. You'll have to come over for dinner and I'll show you my skills.
I would love that.
Yeah. We love to entertain and love to cook. Friends would just demand that I make the focaccia and they were like, you got to sell this. Like, this is just so good. People would buy this. Like, I would pay a lot of money for this. And I was kind of like, nah. And then I kind of was like, okay, you know, let's see where this goes. Signed up for a farmer's market, started selling there.
What was your first farmer's market? Which location? Where were you?
It was the Rosendale Farmer's Market, not far from Woodstock. It's upstate, kind of near SUNY New Paltz area. And yeah, on Sundays, I definitely grew quite a like following of devout customers. It was a really small market, but people really loved the focaccia and loved to see what kind of flavors I was whipping up every week. And then from there kind of grew into some small grocers and coffee shops, dropping off these, you know, packaged focaccia that people could just buy, fresh focaccia.
So your strategy was very super localized at the beginning.
Yeah, very local, organic, just trying to kind of build some momentum in the, you know, Hudson Valley. Mind you, when I'm doing all of this, I have a full-time job.
Yes. And what was your, tell us about that. What was your full-time job?
I worked in tech. I did communications and actually just at this very juncture, we were getting acquired. And so my job was kind of kicked into overdrive as we were.
Intense.
Yeah. So it was a lot doing all of this at once and, you know, more grocers wanting me to wanted to carry my products and wanting to drop off multiple times a week and just drive all over. And it got to be a lot. So that's when I was just thinking long term, do I want to open a bakery? Probably, I don't know, maybe one day, but not right now. And so I had to put it on hold. And it wasn't until moving to LA about 2.5 years ago that the spark was kind of lit again, I think.
Reignited.
Yeah. The food scene is just so great here. Connecting with a lot of my friends who moved to the West Coast from New York, hosting a lot, entertaining. I making the focaccia all the time again. Had to find a way to pursue this.
But okay, so you also have a really sweet story too. Like, who is Jenny?
Yes. Jenny is my great aunt this is kind of all in honor of her because I feel like she was the one to show me that food and cooking for others is nourishing not only the stomach, but like the mind and the soul. And essentially, you know, when I was really young, elementary school, I was getting bullied a lot. Grew up in Austin. I would pretend to be sick from school and didn't want to go. And both my parents worked. And so, you know, my dad would drive me to Auntie Jenny's, and she lived in the north end of Boston, which is the very Italian area, in this little tenement building apartment. And he would drop me off, and well, I'd walk up the steep staircase, and she'd be waiting at the top. And she would just cook for me all day, and we watched soap operas. And it was just a place of comfort and safety. And that was when I felt, I think, the most just, I don't know, warm and buzzy. And she would just cook these amazing, very simple Italian meals, just like pasta and red sauce, amazing meatballs.
I think you really get that feeling with your brand and with your product. I think you're doing a good job of that.
Oh, thank you.
I love that story. Okay, so you were in New York, and you got going with farmers markets and some local business.
Yep.
Then you and your partner moved to LA. Because your business was so localized, I assume you basically started over, correct?
Exactly. Yeah.
So how long have you been in LA, and you know, what kind of account base have you built up? So tell us about your current customers.
Mm-hmm. I worked with a food scientist on my take and bake product. The packaging, all of that took so much longer than expected. So getting to LA and having the idea, and I have to give my girlfriend credit because she was really the push to, you know,
help to
figure out how can we make this a product that is scalable and that people
scalable. Mm-hmm. So when did you start that R&D process with the mix?
The mix came second. Kind of came up with the idea, honestly, last spring. So we're approaching like a year.
So it took you almost a year to launch the mix.
I think also, mind you, left my corporate job 2 months ago. So juggling both is hard. So many people are doing it. I think that that's a great way to test the market. I think it's risky leaving your steady, sure thing.
Yeah, it's scary for sure.
But there comes a point where you have to do it to dedicate as much time as you can, just because it's a full time, you're wearing so many hats, and your to-do list is growing and growing. You need that bandwidth.
There's only so many hours in the day.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And eventually you have to focus on one thing. Otherwise you're going to be good at nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So there comes a time, but no, I'm all about founders, like holding on to that safety net of the corporate job until you've like really got strong signs that
proven the product market fit.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. Totally. So, okay. So right now you're in restaurants, I think you're doing some coffee shops maybe. Is that right?
Yeah. We are in trying to permeate like the boutique grocers of LA and entering New York this summer actually as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the juice to grocers, that you're corner natural wine or bottle shop, trying to get on the shelves, both the take and bake and the mix. Some of these bottle shops don't have a freezer, you know? So in that case, it would just be the mix.
So then you have three product lines then, right? You have fresh,
mm-hmm.
you have take and bake,
mm-hmm.
which is frozen.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have shelf stable mix.
Correct.
Yes.
So firing on all cylinders over here. Yeah, I think the food service is a newer angle. Just recently got in our first restaurant. And I think going forward with that angle for a few reasons. One, I think brand awareness obviously. Yeah. Two, I think, you know, people are going to restaurants and if they see the chef has chosen a particular bread, it's kind of, it's vetted in a way. And they're like, oh, wow, like yeah. I got to take notice. Who are these people? And then it's also just recurring steady revenue, which is really non-existent in this world in CPG.
It's interesting. You've got three product lines and it's almost like each product line has a different customer base and kind of like a different channel strategy. Mm-hmm. Definitely complex and a little bit trickier, but also at the same time, really lends itself to like a super regional, narrow and deep strategy. So like you can base your product can basically touch any type of food situation, right? Mm-hmm. An on-premise situation where people like chefs just want a really great fresh product and they just absolutely don't have the time to be baking fresh bread, exactly. Right? Mm-hmm. Number one. Number two, you've got your shopper, your shop and shop, your shoppy shop type client that
wants convenience. You
know, wants convenience. And then you have your like enthusiastic home baker mm-hmm. that is more of like a grocery CPG product, like very clearly CPG that has like lots of national potential. So I think it's very interesting how you've like developed your product strategy.
Thanks. And I think remaining nimble and flexible, if we shall see, if one or two or, you know, something isn't working, I think is also a good lesson, you know, remaining open and being able to pivot and shut something down if it's not working.
Right. Because surely there will come a time, you know, one of the products like starts to really outpace the others. So I'm just, I wonder what that's going to look like for you, you know?
Yes, definitely.
Like next year, like what your SKU mix will look like next year at this time.
Totally.
Versus right now.
Totally. Yeah, it's so early on and everything is working great right now, but time will tell.
Did you know that 70 to 80% of CPG brands fail within the first year? Yikes. Because they lack a strategic go-to-market plan, they start without enough funding, or they don't have a clear path to sustainable growth. We've got you covered though. So in Launch Lab, you'll learn how to launch, grow, and scale your brand the right way. We'll give you a step-by-step roadmap, insider strategies for success, marketing and sales playbook, funding and financial guidance. So this is for you if you're a first-time food and beverage CPG founder, you have an idea for a brand and you need a playbook, you're in the early stages and you haven't yet nailed your go-to-market strategy, or you want to expand, you're navigating farmers markets or Shopify and want to venture into retail. Maybe you're developing your product and you're delving into formulation or contemplating a retail entrance. You need strategic guidance. You can be operational, but you're still seeking to refine your go-to-market strategy. Launch Lab Masterclass March, April, May session is sold out. But not to worry, we're launching another session in September. We kick off that first week of September. So go to the show notes and sign up to be on the wait list to get notifications about when early registration opens up. Trust me, if you are doing this for the first time, this is an educational session you absolutely do not want to miss. So what are some of like the surprising things that you have learned about distribution since you started? Because I imagine you're starting to consider distributors because of your CPG mix product. Mm-hmm. So talk to us about how those conversations have started to go and like, have you come up against any hurdles or anything surprising on the distribution piece?
Totally. Yeah. Currently looking for a smaller distributor on both the West and the East Coast for the mix in particular. That is something I'm learning in real time. And I think the more you talk to other founders, learn about the pitfalls and the ins and outs is, I think that's been key for me. But I think right now I That's exactly what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, exactly, is land a distributor. But are you presenting to retailers first?
I think just my strategy has been to get on as many shelves of the small stores as possible to have that evidence and proof point that I can go to these bigger, you know, the Lassen's, Lazy Acres, the smaller chains that permeate the West Coast, to really demonstrate that these are products that people want and like.
Are willing to pay for.
I mean, something that has been, I guess, unexpected. Was that the question?
Yeah, like any sort of like, oh, wow, I wasn't thinking about that with distribution. Uh-huh. Or
I think really, you know, everything comes back to the margins. It's just that the distributors, you don't even think about the cut that they need and how that impacts what your
take home is.
Mm-hmm. So I think having really strong margins and kind of accounting for that amongst other.
So important.
Yeah.
So important.
It's so important. So that's been a learning lesson for me. And then I do think just because it's so incredibly competitive, having like a strong, and I feel like this goes without saying, but strong branding and strong packaging is really, really important just because I think it does give you a leg up and will intrigue someone who might
absolutely
normally be like, oh, another cracker or something. You know, I think having a brand and a packaging and kind of like that identity that sets you apart is really key. And I knew that, but I didn't know it could really make or break someone maybe taking a chance on you.
Oh yeah. For shelf presence. Absolutely. Right. So I want to hear about like your manufacturing experiences and like you being in the kitchen and what that's like versus having this product now that's outsourced with a co-packer. Mm-hmm. How often are you in the kitchen and what does your team look like and how are you managing the self-manufacturing right now?
Yes, I'm in the kitchen currently 3 or 4 days a week baking.
Do you enjoy that, Susanna? Do you enjoy that process?
I do. There's definitely times where I'm so overloaded with tasks and
business stuff
and like admin stuff that I'm just like, oh, gotta go to the kitchen, yeah. You know? I get there and I'm like, and I begin the dough and I'm instantly happy and just grateful to get to do what I'm doing. But it is draining. It is draining. And especially you said team currently fundraising, and I don't want to take us off track, but I'm looking to get some hands for baking and just the packaging. Even that process is very hands-on.
Laborious. Yeah, yes. Yeah. Laborious.
And so I am in the kitchen 3 or 4 days, but the day after the baking, I'm typically packaging, putting the boxes together, fulfilling orders. I just got on fair a few weeks ago and it's been really busy. So
great.
Yes, it's great, but it shipping and packaging the boxes, you know, it's a lot. So I'm definitely, you know, this week I've been there every day going there.
Yeah, shortly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What are you selling on fair? The mixes?
And the take and bake.
And the take and bake. Okay. And then for the take and bake, do you ship it frozen or you ship it cold?
Ship it frozen. I have, yeah, insulated thermal packaging. I do like 2 days shipping. So no ground, that's for sure.
By the way, side note, I love your take and bake packaging. It's really, really cute.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. It's so cute. I love it. You guys, everybody should check it out on Susanna's website. So, okay, now compare being in the kitchen 3-4 days a week to working with a co-packer. Like, was that just like such a relief to get the powder, to get the mix set up?
Yes, it was. It was, and I've heard a lot of horror stories with co-packers for sure.
Okay.
And I feel like I was blessed with a really great one that I loved to work with. And it was very seamless and they were willing to do like a smaller run for me. So not like the 10,000 units. We just did like 3,500, which is so
that's wonderful.
And that finding a co-packer that would do this, a smaller run. I know that doesn't sound like a small run, but it was tricky to find. And that whole process is tricky as well. A lot of research and being resourceful, asking questions and being curious. The startup CPG Slack channel is such a great resource. But it was really cool to be there that day when it was taking
the
place.
The first production run.
See the assembly line. And it does feel very magical and exciting to watch it come to life. And then you have all your inventory.
Yeah, exactly. And now you just sell it.
I had a great experience with that. And we shall see. Hopefully we need to do another one soon, very soon.
Yes, for sure. I want to shift gears a little bit into fundraising and how you got Jenny's House going. So you're bootstrapped, correct? You started, have you brought in any investment?
Yeah.
And did you start with savings? Did you take out a loan, debt financing? Like, how did you actually financially get your business going?
It was savings and being very careful with my money over the past 5 years
since you started this.
And I think that it's been, you know, the kind of stop and go, but obviously over the past year, been building it more quickly, and then obviously left my job 2 months ago. So I've been full time, but yeah, have done credit cards and savings, and not like it's been easy.
Sure.
At all. I think I wanted to do some fundraising. My advice and what I've heard on the finance side of things and VC and people I've spoken with is wait until you really, really, really need it. That's the approach I've taken.
You have a need. Well, I think it's interesting what you're just talking about, how you recently opened up Fair as a sales channel and you've been busy. You've seen a big uptick. So now would maybe be a time to consider that if you don't have the funds to be able to hire people.
Totally.
That's great. Or there's a big retailer rollout or something like that. Such an easier conversation for fundraising, saying like, I have all this demand, I can't fulfill it on my own, I need some investment to help me get over the hump.
Totally.
Versus, I'm raising money because I want to grow my business. And this is what I'm going to go into. I'm not there yet. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of like, well, what do you need to spend money on if you're not there yet? So it's just a different conversation. And the first one is much easier to have, that's for sure.
Totally. And I think so many people choose different times to raise money. Not that one is good and one is bad, but I think this is what's worked. Now the urgency is there and the need is there to continue moving quickly.
Yeah.
And to continue the momentum, because I think riding that wave of momentum and building that is really important. And that's the capital can give you that runway to continue.
So much success in this industry, I feel like, has to do with timing too, right? I'm all about like the slow build and like building things organically.
Yeah.
There's also some time periods where things, stars start to align with like categories and trends and retailers and buyer interest. And you do have to really jump on those things as well, too. So much of it is timing.
Totally.
So what are your long-term plans with Jenny's House? Like, where do you see yourself in 5 years and 7 years?
For me, in the artisanal bread market, it's very fragmented. There hasn't been like a national player to emerge as the owner of the category or the recognizable brand. And so my goal is to be that, to be the first stone milled heirloom grain bread brand to emerge in the market. And I think down the line, that's what we want to be, is the key player and owner of that.
So you want to venture outside of focaccia potentially, or you want to really double down on focaccia and spread awareness around this specific type of bread?
I have other ideas that are focaccia adjacent that might be in like a cracker category or breadcrumbs right. or other baking mixes.
I see.
So I think definitely keeping the Italian roots and heritage as a focal point. And Auntie Jenny, she made a lot of her breadcrumbs that made her meatballs so good that that was definitely part of it. So, but I definitely have ideas for how to like expand the line, but keep it in the same foundation for sure. That's our goal. Acquisition or getting bought, all that sort of stuff. I'm not trying to focus on that. I'm just trying to be the best that we can be and the leader of this artisanal bread category. Yeah,
sure. I think that's okay too. And I think that I would imagine that your company generates positive cash flow because of the type of products that you're selling and the fact that you have everyday customers in addition to CPG. Is that accurate?
Yeah, for sure.
Obviously, you're very small, right?
Yes.
But you've built a sustainable business up to this point.
My spreadsheets and everything are kind of keep me up at night, like just making sure that it is profitable and that I'm not making silly financial decisions and that that you're tracking everything you spend. When you're shipping product, especially like frozen, things can get heavy and shipping costs, you know, you're shipping 2 days. Yes. And everything that goes in the package from inserts and the recipe card. And then you're thinking about all the people you have paid down the line to get the packaging.
Oh, it adds up.
Your web developer. And again, I'm doing like as much as I can on my own, but obviously you
have to instill help.
Yes, totally.
For sure.
Totally. I have a great marketing lead that I actually brought on a couple months ago on a contract basis, but she has been great as well.
I love that. Amazing. So advice, my last questions for you. So quick, rapid fire advice for the early stage female founder who's just getting going. She has a dream. What are you telling her?
I think honestly, and I say this carefully, but start before you're ready, because I think so many people wait until something is perfect to put it out there. I'm not saying print out a label online and stick it in and go to, you know, Whole Foods or anything like that. But I think that people sit on their ideas for so long and they're so bogged down by their responsibilities, their day job. I think carving out that time to really develop what that spark is. And I don't think I waited too long, but I think that...
You wish you would have started sooner.
Yeah. I think so. Again, it's all about timing. And I think people wait for things to be perfect. And I do think there's something to be said about like just like continuing to move forward.
Yeah, totally. I see a lot of people get stuck on that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Susanna, thank you so much for pulling the curtain back behind Jenny's house and giving us the dish. I love it. How can people find you? Give us your Instagram, your website.
Oh, yeah. Instagram is It's Jenny's House. You know, someone has Jenny's house and maybe one day I'll be knocking down the door. So it's Jenny's House, J-E-N-N-I-E. That's how Jenny spelled her name. Yeah, jennyshouse.com. I'm actually going to be launching at the Hollywood Farmers Market next month, which I'm excited. Bringing back the farmers market. Excited to get people to try it and get people to learn the brand and taste it.
I love that.
Or find me on the stores of the shelves of some of your favorite small grocers.
Okay. Everybody, please try Jenny's House. If you love bread, you will just die over her product. So thank you so much, Susanna, for joining us.
We'll
see you soon.
Okay.
Thank you. If you liked what you heard, it would mean so much if you follow and review us wherever you listen to podcasts. For tips and advice on your food and beverage CPG brand, you can find us on Instagram at It's All Happening Co. or visit our website at itsallhappeningagency.co to be the first to hear about workshops, courses, and in-person events and freebies. Until next week.